On behalf of the New York State Secession Center Collaborative, I would like to turn the call over now to Annie Beigel. Go ahead, Annie.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the call. I'm Annie Beigel, Manager of Cessation Programs for the New York State Department of Health's Tobacco Control Program. And on behalf of the New York State Tobacco Cessation Center Collaborative, the New York State Smokers Quit Line, I'd like to welcome you to today's conference call, Principles and Practice of Motivational Interviewing. Our featured speaker today is Dr. Jonathan Fader, Assistant Professor at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine and member of the National Motivational Interviewing Trainers Network. Today's call is a topic area that's been requested by several of you, and we are pleased to dedicate two collaborative conference calls to cover motivational interviewing. On the September 2nd conference call, we'll be covering motivational interviewing approaches with the patient who's not ready to quit. Also, I want to let you know that the collaborative work group who brings you these bi-monthly calls is very pleased with the number of healthcare clinicians who've been participating with us on these calls. On average, these bi-monthly calls have anywhere from 400 to 600 healthcare clinicians per call. So we want to thank all of you in healthcare for being so dedicated to your role in the quitting process of your patients. Before we begin today's call, I have some CME logistics that I need to cover. Chikatilly Associates Incorporated is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This activity is accredited for a maximum of one AMA PRA Category 1 credit. Physicians should only claim credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. The ACCME requires that faculty participating in a CME activity disclose to the audience any relationship with a pharmaceutical or medical equipment company which might pose a conflict of interest. Dr. Fader has no real or perceived vested interests that relate to this presentation, nor does he have any relationships with pharmaceutical companies, biomedical device manufacturers, and or other corporations whose products or services are related to pertinent therapeutic areas. There are no commercial supporters of this activity. Now, nursing, respiratory therapy, CASAC contact hours, and certificates of attendance are also available for this activity today. And to obtain continuing education credits, please complete the verification of attendance and evaluation form sent by email and available on the New York State Smokers Quit Site website. Fax all completed forms to Chikatilly Associates within 2 weeks of today's program in order to receive credit. And we'll be sending the certificates out in about 6 to 8 weeks following today's program. And now, it's my pleasure to hand the call over to you, Dr. Jonathan Fader. Dr. Fader?
Well, thank you so much, Annie, for organizing and introducing this call. I just want to welcome everybody, and good afternoon to you all. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to introduce or perhaps give you more information if you already know about motivational interviewing. So before I do that, I just, as Annie mentioned, I'm just required to let you all know that I have no interest or perceived or vested interest to relate to this presentation, nor have any pharmaceutical relationships with pharmaceutical companies, biomedical device manufacturers, or other corporations or whose products or services are related to pertinent therapeutic areas. So now that we got through the business of that, I'd like to let you know, if you'll advance to the next slide here, about the training objectives. What do we hope to accomplish today in our time here all together? Well, first, I'm excited to get you a little bit familiar with the theory of motivational interviewing. And then also, I'm going to introduce you to basic motivational interviewing technique. I know that a lot of you are familiar with motivational interviewing. Perhaps you've heard of it, but you don't know really what it is. So I'm going to get you really to the point where you understand what we're talking about when we say motivational interviewing, and then you have a real introduction to what these techniques are that you might have heard about it. Okay, if you'll advance to the next slide here. So what are we going to do in this in the next 45 minutes to an hour? I'm going to give you some background on some change theories, some theories that led to the development of motivational interviewing. Then we're going to talk about the theory of motivational interviewing. We'll talk about handling resistance as it applies to quitting around cigarettes use, tobacco use, smoking. And then I'll introduce to you the technique of motivational interviewing. What techniques really are emblematic? What represents motivational interviewing as we see it practiced with smoking and other problem behaviors that you encounter in healthcare? So before I go on, you know, I'll just say I like to start off each lecture that I do or talk with an important theorist. So here's one that I think, if you go to the next slide, you'll see someone who I think has said a lot of wise things about substance abuse and particularly drug use. You know, look, children, this is all I'm going to say about drugs. Stay away from them. There's a time and place for everything, and it's called college. So, you know, why do I have the chef from South Park up here? Well, you know, one of the things that we see in problem behaviors is that whether they're adolescents or adults, people are exposed to things like cigarettes and smoking everywhere they go. And so motivational interviewing, instead of judging people or confronting them about their use, instead of telling people or advising when they may not be ready for advice, we're looking to find out from them, motivates them in terms of changing. So to be serious here for a second and to look at some theories that may inform our understanding of motivational interviewing, if you go to the next slide here, we'll talk a little bit for a minute about one theory, the trans-theoretical model. And I'm sure many of you have heard of this or read about this, or the stages of change model. You should think around smoking, for example. People would either not smoke or smoke, that they would quit or they not. Quitters or not quitters. And one of the things that we're going to do here when we're thinking about whether people are ready to quit or not is to look at change as a continuous variable, that people progress through stages of change, and that people can move through this cycle in different ways. So if you go to the next slide, you'll see the different stages of change that Prochaska and DiClemente theorize, and that we apply when we're thinking about where someone's at in the process of change, rather than not being dichotomous or changing or not changing. The stages that people move through when they're deciding whether they're going to quit smoking or not. So I'll see the stages for you, and you can think about this the next time you're meeting with a client. Oh, pre-contemplation. What might a smoker say about pre-contemplation? A pre-contemplator, meaning they're before contemplation, would say, well, you know, I don't really smoke that much. Well, my aunt smoked until she was 150 and nothing ever happened to her. So there's no reason for changing. In contemplation, someone starts to voice the pros and cons of changing. Well, you know, I really should quit, but it helps me relax. Or, well, I'm kind of worried about the long-term effect. You know, I know my uncle got emphysema, but if I quit, I might gain 10 pounds. There's the pros and cons, okay? Preparation is when someone starts to talk about, oh, maybe a plan towards changing, but actually hasn't embarked on that yet. They may say, well, I'm going to call up the New York State Smokers Quit Line, but they haven't actually done it yet. So there's a plan to do something about their cigarette use or their tobacco use, but they haven't actually done it yet. Action, someone has done something about smoking. Maybe they're chewing Nicorette gum, maybe they're taking the patch, maybe they're taking Wellbutrin, Zyban. They're doing something to help with releasing or quitting or changing their smoking or tobacco use behavior. And maintenance, someone is continuing that change. Now, importantly here, when someone relapses, we used to think that they sort of went back to zero. Like if you're playing a game of Sorry, you go back to start. In actuality, when someone relapses, instead of going back to pre-contemplation, what we'd like them to do is to help guide them back to maintenance or action by looking for their motivation. There's a common idea in relapse prevention about the abstinence violation effect, that if someone quits smoking and they relapse, that they may say, well, I already smoked one cigarette. Let me go back to smoking. Or I already started chewing again. I might as well just go all the way. Our goal is to help them get back to their motivations, to get them back at least into preparation or action rather than going back to pre-contemplation. And so another great, I think, theorist who talks about this, if you go to the next slide here, Michael Jackson said it. So before you look at this slide, what I want you to do is you see all those yeah-yeahs. Now, I know a lot of you are out there in your conference rooms with all your colleagues. I want you to really get into this with me. So I'm going to sing the lines. And, you know, I may be knowing a lot about motivational interviewing. My singing voice is not that great, so you have to support me here. So what I want you to do is I want you to say, yeah, yeah, wherever you are, even if you're by yourself looking at this, just shut your office door, and you sing the chorus with me. So I said, I want to be starting something. You got to be starting something. I said, you want to be starting something. You got to be starting something. It's too high to get over.
Yeah.
Slow to get under.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuck in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pain is thunder.
Yeah, yeah.
High to get over.
Yeah, yeah.
Too low to get under.
Yeah, yeah.
You're stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
The pain is thunder.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to congratulate, because there's one lucky person who didn't mute their phone, and whoever that is, you've just signed to about 500 or 600 providers all across New York State, so I have to applaud you in my office here. I would like everybody to definitely mute your phone, just so we can make sure that there's no feedback, but I want to congratulate that person for singing out loud. So why do I have this up here, outside that it was enjoyable maybe to hear my singing voice? Well, if you look at the lyrics here, you're in the middle, and the pain is thunder, right? Now, sometimes when I'm working with a smoker who goes back and forth about quitting, I get frustrated. I want to tell them what to do. I want to say, you know, you really should do something about this. I know that, as we'll see later, that's really not helpful, usually, in behavior change. So one way that I really am able to empathize or understand their perspective is to look at this line from the song. You're stuck in the middle, and the pain is thunder. Okay? For a smoker, anyone around behavior change who's in pre-contemplation or contemplation, most people feel very stuck. There are a lot of reasons to quit smoking, but there are also, for a lot of people, a lot of reasons to continue smoking. Our goal is to help them resolve that ambivalence using the skill of motivational interviewing. So again, I have to give a virtual high five here to those who sang along with me in the various places that you work across New York State. Let's move on and think about how we're going to apply this technique. In the next slide, you'll see a model for changes in substance abuse or smoking nicotine dependence. And what you look here, if you look at these different stages, what you'll see is that when someone is in action right here, if you go down a little bit to the bottom, you'll see assessment and treatment. We know exactly what to do when someone, all of you across New York State, I'm positive that all of you excellent providers, doctors, nurses, social workers, clinicians, pharmacists, all you different people who work in healthcare, right? All the psychologists, all the nurses, all the patient care representatives, all the case managers, all the people who work around behavior change and smoking, I'm sure you're experts on action. Meaning, when someone is ready to change, the action box here, someone knows that they're ready to change, I'm sure that you really know what to do, right? So you provide Wellbutrin, or Zyban, you might give them the patch, you might talk to them about different behaviors they could change, their triggers for smoking. Now, the issue really here is, when someone's not ready to change, how do we talk to them? What do we do? Someone is in pre-contemplation, not yet ready to change. They don't want to change. They're being sent here by their husband or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend or kids or grandkids. When someone isn't ready to change, they're mandated to us. How do we do? Well, we focus on enhancing their motivation using the skill of motivational interviewing. So, before I move on, I'm just going to ask one more time if everybody could just make sure I'm mute. I'm getting a little feedback. I want to make sure everybody can hear me clearly. So just if you could make sure that you mute your phone, that would be great. So now I'll just move on here to the actual theory. What are we talking about when we say motivational interviewing? Now that we know how to meet people where they're at, think about what stage they're in, if they're ready or not for change. Well, if you look at the next stage here, the next slide, sorry, you'll see one of the definitions of this technique that was developed by Bill Miller and Steve Rolnick in the 80s and early 90s. This technique can be defined as a client-centered directive method for enhancing intrinsic motivation to change by exploring and resolving ambivalence. Now, I don't expect you to understand motivational interviewing from this slide. I just want to have this as a start-off point. And throughout the rest of the talk this afternoon, I'm going to try my best to help you understand in more detail how to define this idea, this motivational enhancement therapy, or motivational interviewing, as it's commonly called. In the next slide, you'll see a quote by Eisenhower that I think is really describes what we're talking about when we talk about motivational interviewing. Motivational is the art of getting people to do what you want to do them to do because they want to do it. So our goal, the art form here, motivational interviewing, the work that we're doing when we're doing motivational enhancement work, is we're trying to look for people to tell us why they'd want to change, not for us to tell them. So what are the guiding principles? Well, if you go to the next slide, you'll see feedback on personal risks. And maybe this is one of the most important things here, that we tend to give people feedback on general risks. Now, a population risk or a general risk for smoking is what? Well, emphysema, lung cancer, respiratory illness. There's many things that everybody will experience if they don't quit smoking. But what we do in motivational interviewing is we focus on personal risks. That is, certain things that people will experience regarding their nicotine use or their smoking tobacco use that only they experience. So what would those things be? Well, we certainly know that not everybody who smokes is married. Not everybody who smokes has kids. Not everybody who smokes is an athlete or has an interest in playing basketball. So we're looking for the particular things in their life that may be reasons for them to change. Everybody has a risk of experiencing, for example, lung cancer, but not everybody has a risk of if they continue to smoke, they won't be able to play basketball, and that's something that's important to them. So we're looking for the things that are important to the people that we're working with, our patients, rather than telling them about general risks that everybody is going to experience. In motivational interviewing, the client takes responsibility for changing, and we're going to talk in more detail about that. But basically, our goal is not we're going to change people or get them to quit smoking. Our goal is to help them think about the pros and cons of their smoking behavior. Advice to change. One of the biggest misconceptions about motivational interviewing is that we don't provide advice. We absolutely provide advice when we're doing motivational interviewing. But if you think back to the stages of change, what stage would we provide that in? Well, certainly not pre-contemplation, because someone's not ready to change. Contemplation, probably not. It's really in preparation. When people start to think about changing is when we step in and give them some options. And when we do that in a menu format, meaning we give them several different solutions. Rather than saying, here, you know, I think you should go to the smoking cessation workshop, we might say, well, there are many things you could choose to do about your smoking. One is we could refer you to another clinic where you're going to talk to a counselor. We could get you a medication that might help. We could give you a nicotine replacement therapy, either a gum or perhaps, the patch. There's many different options to you. We could talk about cue control. Which of those seems like the one that might work for you? Okay. Other things we do is we try to look to boost people's self-efficacy, their sense that they can do it. Okay. So I'm going to go through the different, if you advance to the next slide, the five principles of motivational interviewing. I'm going to review the principles of motivational interviewing for you so we can understand what are the theories or the principles or the core ideas that drive this work. Well, expressing empathy, if you look here on the top of that slide, expressing empathy is thought as one of the most important things in behavior change, meaning you as a provider, your ability to listen reflectively and show the person that you understand the pros and cons of their behavior, of their smoking behavior, you're going to be in a much better place to help them quit. That we assume that ambivalence around quitting smoking is normal. Every smoker that we meet, I assume that when I work with a smoker, they're going to be ambivalent, right? And so my goal is to try to show them that I understand both the reasons that they want to quit and the reasons why they might not. And what we're doing here is we're trying to get in motivational interviewing the client, the patient, to voice the reasons for change. We want to know why they think they should change. And that change here comes out of when people see that their behavior, their smoking behavior, is in conflict with something important to them. For example, as I said before, if you have someone who's smoking who's interested in basketball, once they start to see for themselves through our discussion with them that that's in conflict, smoking is in conflict with their basketball interest, that's what's perceived, that's what we think motivates change. So if you go to the next slide, what we try to do here is we try not to argue. And I'm not talking about being mean here, because I don't think any of you are mean. I think, though, that we all have a tendency to try to convince people or persuade them why they should quit smoking. And we know that when we do that, we're going to get more resistance from our clients. In the next slide, you'll see rolling with resistance. We know that when there is resistance, as we see a lot with smokers or other people who have ambivalence around their behavior, we're trying to roll with it. So what do we do? What does that mean? Well, if someone starts to tell you why they don't want to smoke, we try to shift to a different way of talking about it, asking them more questions. And that sometimes when people object to what we're saying, if they disagree with your data about smoking and its consequences, that we don't have to argue with them. We'll go to a different strategy, ask a different question. We're going to talk certainly more about that. And lastly, supporting self-efficacy. That if we show, as providers, as clinicians, if we show that we believe that someone can quit, they're much more likely to be able to do it. Sometimes we get disappointed, we get discouraged with our clients, and, you know, we, in some ways, whether we don't give up, we stay with them. But some part of us gives up. So our ability to find something that we believe in the client, even when they keep on relapsing, or they try to quit and they come back, to try to find something that we believe in them and show that belief in them is really a high predictor, or an influential predictor. It means it'll help them change. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you go to the next slide, here's a patient here that was told, oh, maybe you should exercise more. Why don't you go walk your dog? And this is how they resolved it, right? So our patients are pretty smart, and they know if they're told to do something that they don't want to do, they'll find a way out of it. We all do this. So resistance is something that we see in our patients, not only clearly in this case about exercise, but about smoking as well. So if you go to the next slide, you'll see that we know that verbal and nonverbal behaviors both constitute resistance. So what's an example of a nonverbal behavior when you're working with someone around smoking cessation? Well, if you think about it, I'm sure you have people that avert eye contact. Maybe they cross their arms. Maybe they don't come. Maybe they come late to the meeting. And that from a motivational interviewing perspective, we expect this. We say this is normal. We're prepared for this. We say, okay, you know what? People are going to be resistant. That the resistance, though, from a motivational interviewing perspective, is not just the result of the behavior of the patient. It's a result of the interaction. That we say that there's really no resistant patients around smoking. There's resistant relationships. That although we as clinicians, we as providers here may only carry maybe 1% of the reason why someone's resistant, we're still involved. There's always two people involved in that relationship. So if you're getting resistance, what we recommend for motivational interviewing is you try something different, that you change your style in talking to the person. So why, in the next slide, why is it important to pay attention to this? Well, first of all, the more resistant your patient is, the less positive outcome you're going to have. And that what we do in motivational interviewing, we focus on trying to reduce resistance. And I'm going to talk, in the second half of this talk about how you do that. What are the specific techniques that you use to reduce resistance when you're talking to a smoker who's in pre-contemplation, who hasn't yet begun to think about the consequences of their smoking or doesn't want to think about the consequences of their smoking? Here's a quote on the next slide about that Joan Rivers. Here's a resistance statement from Ms. Rivers. I don't exercise. If God wanted me to bend over, he would have put diamonds on the floor. So patients say all kinds of funny things. Our clients say all kinds of things about resisting particular behaviors around healthy behaviors around quitting smoking. And our goal is to do what? Well, in the next slide, our goal is to try to encourage, by our discussion, change talk. Anything that the patient or the client says in the movement of quitting smoking. We're looking to elicit or bring out in our clients, in our patients, their reasons for change. And we're trying to, in some way, roll with resistance in order to minimize when a client or a patient talks about the reasons why they should continue smoking. Next slide, what we know is that really older approaches to behavior change around smoking and other behaviors really focused on getting the counselor to tell the person why they should change. And we know that that doesn't work. We know that people get more resistant, especially people who are in pre-contemplation. What they do, this style of interacting with people, really, when you're trying to persuade someone or tell them why they should quit smoking by telling them about the negative consequences, what they end up doing, they end up voicing the reasons why they shouldn't. So if we tell a smoker, listen, someone who's not interested in quitting, I got to tell you, you know, you're smoking, you know, two packs a day here, and, you know, at the rate you're smoking, you're really putting yourself at risk for lung cancer, emphysema, other respiratory illness, and, you know, I'm really concerned about you. Right. Some patients might react to that, but a lot of patients, what they do is they give excuses. They'll say, yeah, I know, but, you know, I'm 30. So, you know, I have plenty of years to quit. Well, as we all know, 30 becomes 40 and 40 becomes 50. So our goal is to not try to push people into changing. Our goal is to, again, find out from them their reasons for change. So going back to some important theorists on the next slide, what does Homer say? Well, Homer says, now, son, you don't want to drink beer. That's for daddies and kids with fake IDs. Well, sometimes when we tell patients that they shouldn't do something, this is what they hear. They try to find the contradictions in what we're telling us. They try to find any reason they can to argue with us, especially those in pre-contemplation and contemplation. If they're in preparation, great. We can tell them all day what they should do. But if they're not yet ready to change, what's really recommended is to figure out a way to try to find their reasons for changing and to roll with their resistance rather than to confront it. So on the next slide, you'll see this quote from Mark Twain that I think describes a little bit about what we're talking about, that habit is habit, and not to be flung out of the window by any man or woman, but coaxed downstairs a step at a time. That our goal here is not to tell people what to do. We're trying to help them, little by little, move through the stages of change into finding their reasons for quitting smoking. Now, if you look on the next slide, Bill Miller, who I said before, he's the founder of this technique of motivational interviewing and one of the founders of the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers, of which I'm a member. Bill Miller tells a story attributed to his work with a woman who's a smoker. I thought it would be especially relevant to discuss on this phone call. So I'll just tell you the story briefly. I'm going to retell it so that, you know, we can tell it for this format. But what happened was that, you know, Dr. Miller was working with this woman who was smoking. He tried everything with her. He tried to convince her. He tried to give her different, you know, treatments for smoking, and she just couldn't quit. She just couldn't find a way. And then all of a sudden she walked into his office, and she said, you know, I quit, Dr. Miller. And so he said, really? How did you do that? What happened? So she said, you know what? I was going to pick up my daughter from school, and you know, and then I realized I'm looking in the car as I'm driving, and I realized I don't have any more cigarettes. So I said, you know, I'm going to go around the corner here, and I'm going to pick up some cigarettes. So she started to do that, and at the same time, just coincidentally, her daughter came out of the school. She saw this in her rearview mirror, that her daughter was coming out of school, but she'd already passed the school on the way to the store, the corner store, to pick up the cigarettes. So she was still going to cigarettes, but then it started to rain, and her daughter just started to get drenched out there, and her daughter was shivering out there in the rain in front of the school. And so the woman looked in the rearview mirror, saw the image of her daughter shivering in the rain, threw out the empty pack of cigarettes, did not buy another pack of cigarettes, drove around the corner, picked up her daughter, and never smoked again. Now, from that powerful story, what can we understand? Well, if you look up here about developing the dissonance or developing the discrepancy, there was a discrepancy that was built from that experience for her. She said in her mind, I want to be a good mom. And smoking, or the action of going to buy these cigarettes, is in some way in conflict with that. By smoking, I'm no longer being a good mother to my daughter who I love so much. And because of that, the way that she resolved that dissonance was to stop smoking. Now, clearly we can't, you know, create precipitation here or a rainstorm. However, what we think about in motivational interviewing is there are tons of ways in which people experience this, find different dissonances in their life or conflicts between where they are and where they want to be related to their smoking. That smoking may be in conflict with a whole bunch of goals or values. So if you look at the next slide here, what we're looking for is the hook, a person's smoking-related issue or problem that if you talk about it can promote change. Maybe it's the way their breath smells and that effect on their ability to be intimate with their partner. Maybe it's their impact on their ability to give talks. Maybe they're someone who, you know, gives lectures and they can't speak as well. Okay, so that's what we're looking for. If you go to the next slide, here's an example of not such a good hook. My boss gave me a motivation tape. It's a recording of him firing people. So that we're not trying to intimidate people by giving them a lot of negative consequences. We're trying to find out from them what are the hooks by asking them really good questions. And so we know that hooks are usually, if you click down, we'll see the next case here in a minute, if hooks are usually about relationships, they're about financial things sometimes, they're about health, there are many different areas where there's hooks. So in case one here, I'll just read it aloud to you, and I want you to think as I'm reading it, what are the hooks here for this smoker? Juan is a 50-year-old unemployed man who is an aspiring artist. He has been smoking two packs a day since he was 18 years old. He complains that he and his girlfriend are always fighting because since she quit smoking last year, she is always getting on him about his smoking. He tells you that he's tried to cut back on smoking before, but that he always starts to smoke heavily again when one of his paintings gets passed over for an art gallery. So I want you to think about it. Now, we all know that Juan is 50. He's smoking two packs a day. He's certainly at risk for all kinds of bad stuff. When we're talking about this from a, you know, etiology here, we're talking about the disease process. Certainly, he's in bad shape if he's going to continue to smoke two packs a day. But what might be the hooks for him? What, if you talk about it with him and he can develop a dissonance, might be something that's going to help him? I want you, wherever you are in your little group, to talk about that. Just for a second here, shout out or, you know, people talk to each other. Tell me what you think the hooks are. All right, we'll go to the next slide here. Here are some hooks that I would think about exploring. What's the relationship around cigarettes with his girlfriend? What questions could we ask him? Well, we could ask him, so how is smoking affecting your relationship? What are your feelings about your girlfriend? What kind of future do you see together? How does smoking involve in that? Open-ended questions about that. What about your artwork, right? How about smoking? How is it related to your artwork? If you continue to smoke, how well will you be able to do to be painting? So those are the two things we might ask about to develop some dissonance or see how they're related to the smoking. Let's see the next case here, the next slide, case two. Gina is a 22-year-old part-time college student. She is an A-minus student, and she's very involved in playing basketball. She's been smoking a half a pack a day since she was 15 years old. She comes into your clinic to find out how to get a pregnancy test. So you look here, I'll just go over the things I would look for here on the next slide are the importance of sports and the pregnancy. How are these things going to be affected in her mind by smoking? In the next slide, a lot of people, we talk about the techniques of MI, and I'm going to introduce you to those in just a minute here. But some people think there's too much focus on really techniques and not the spirit. So from this perspective of motivational interviewing, what we really try to do in the spirit to stay, some people talk about motivational interviewing as a way of being rather than a technique. So let's go through here just briefly. Motivational interviewing, really we're thinking about trying to get the reasons from the client. We're asking them to articulate the reasons why they want to change. We know that persuasion is really not a good way. It's not going to work well at getting people to change. And that people's readiness to change is really a result of our relationship, our interaction with them, rather than their sort of static or solid trait that they may have. And that we think of the motivational interviewing as a partnership, rather than us being the experts, although we may have a lot of information to share with the patient. In the next slide, you'll see this represented more kind of graphically. On the bottom there is the being, the spirit. We try to be collaborative with our patients. We try to evoke in them their reasons for change, and we try to focus on their autonomy. And then we went over the expressing empathy, avoiding argumentation, rolling with resistance, developing discrepancy, and supporting self-efficacy as the core components. Now we're going to talk briefly about the techniques of open-ended questions, reflective listening, affirmations, and summaries. So these techniques form the acronym OARS. So I always ask myself, am I rowing through when I'm talking to patients? Am I asking open-ended questions? Am I affirming them? Am I listening reflectively? Am I doing good summaries of what they're saying? So if you go to the next slide here, you'll see some examples of open-ended questions. What difficulties have you had in relation to smoking? How has smoking stopped you from doing what you want to do? In what ways do you think other people have been or will be affected if your health gets worse? What do you think will happen if you don't make a change regarding your smoking? What is there about your smoking that you or other people might see as reasons for concern? So these are all open-ended questions that you can ask people in pre-contemplation or contemplation to elicit some of the hooks. They speak of my drinking, but never of my thirst. We have a tendency always to focus on the negative consequences of smoking, but not really focus so much on why people do it. So we must, in order to understand the pros and cons, ask the questions on the next slide. What does smoking do for you? What do you like about smoking? How does smoking help? If we just talk about why people should quit, they're going to talk about all the reasons why they shouldn't. So we ask these questions and we reflect our understanding of for people so that they can then talk about some reasons for quitting when we ask them about what are the negative consequences in the questions I suggested before. And the next slide, you'll see an example of what I mean. There's so many reasons not to change our behavior. Purchase 6 Lean Cuisine entrees in a single order and receive a free 56-ounce container of Eddie's ice cream. There's many, many reasons. There's always someone out there offering you a cigarette, offering you a way to continue your problem behavior. So our goal really here is to show people that we understand that if they quit, they're going to gain that weight, and we understand in a ton of detail why that will be difficult for them. That will open the door for them to not be so resistant and then talk with us about their reasons for change. I'm going to share with you how we use also reflection in the next slide. Reflection is one of the ways that we show people, we express empathy, going back to the core components, and we also develop a discrepancy between the problem behavior of smoking and their important goals or values by rolling with resistance as well. So in the next slide here, you'll see a simple reflection. I can't quit smoking. All my friends smoke. So you may be tempted to say, well, you know, would you jump off a bridge if all your friends jump? We're trying not to confront people. We're not trying to say, well, I understand that, but. As soon as we say but, we're confronting people. So here's how you could reflect that. It's difficult for you to think about quitting smoking because you're surrounded by people who smoke. There's also amplified reflection. If you go to the next slide, right, here's an amplified reflection. An amplified reflection here is, my girlfriend is exaggerating. I'm not that bad. I only smoke on weekends. It's not a big deal. So you could say, well, it seems to you that she has no reason at all to worry about you. Now, one thing I'll just say about amplified reflection is you certainly want to watch your intonation here. You don't want to say, hey, you know, it seems that she has no reason at all to worry about you. Right, because that's, you know, that sarcasm is going to definitely elicit resistance. So you're just saying it in a very even intonation. Okay, it seems to you that she has no reason at all to worry about you. Now, no reason at all. What do you think this person might say? They might say, it's not that she has no reason at all. I mean, I do smoke, and, you know, there's, of course, I understand that. But, you know, she's exaggerating. And then you can reflect again, okay, so she's exaggerating, but, you know, you do smoke, and so that's something on your mind a little bit. So we're coming from someone who's very pre-contemplative, right, to getting them into contemplation, which is our goal. We're not trying to pull them, as Mark Twain said. We're trying to elicit their reasons for change. In the next slide here, you'll see an interaction between a healthcare provider and a patient. Okay, so the patient says, so I'm thinking about quitting smoking sometime. I know it'll catch up with me in my health-wise one of these days. I'm just worried about putting on a few pounds. So as you can see from this statement, this person is in which stage of change? There's pros and cons of changing. So they're not pre-contemplation, because that person has saying nothing about the reasons for change. And they're not yet preparation, because they're not yet ready to do something about it. So they're in contemplation. They're where Michael Jackson, where we all sang so well earlier. So really, this person is in contemplation. So I'm thinking I got to quit smoking sometime. I know it will catch up with me health-wise one of these days. I'm just worried about putting on a few pounds. So the clinician says, so on the one hand, you're concerned about getting a few pounds when you quit. But on the other hand, you feel you should quit smoking so you can stay healthy. So that's a double-sided reflection. And the patient says, yeah, you know, I've seen what happens to those lifetime smokers, and thinking about what might happen to me if I don't quit smoking kind of freaks me out. And then the clinician reflects again, thinking about the long-term effects of smoking scares you. So what we've done here is we've got the patient to voice the reasons for change. Instead of telling the patient, look, you know, you're going to, long-term effects of smoking, you hear what they are, and you should think about that. My opinion is most, not all, but many patients know the consequences already, right? Lots of people know the consequences. What they haven't yet voiced are their reasons or how the consequences will affect their life. So that's our goal in motivational interviewing, is to try to have them talk about that in this way. So the reflection, I just want to point out one more thing about the reflection before we start to wrap up here. You know, the reflection here, also what this clinician did, is it said the reasons not to change first. So on the one hand, you're concerned about gaining a few pounds. That's the reason not to quit. But on the other hand, you feel that you should quit smoking so that you stay healthy. So by doing this, the patient picks up with the last thing that person said. They've reflected the pros and cons, and they ended with the reasons to quit, and the patient picks up on that. So if you move to the next slide, I'm just going to suggest to you some ways to think about learning, continuing your quest and learning about this important technique of motivational interviewing. First of all, I would just say, try it. See what happens. Try the oars, right? Try doing some more open-ended questions as the ones I suggested to you. You can certainly list the slide off of the New York State Quitline website, and so that, you know, is a resource to you. So try to ask some more open-ended questions. Try to see what happens if you do some more reflections. And certainly, if you're more interested in learning about the technique, about using affirmations and summaries and more detail about the motivational interviewing technique, one thing you can do is you can look into reading the book. It's in its second edition by Bill Miller, William Miller, and Stephen Rolnick. You can go to the motivational interviewing website, which is there too, motivationalinterviewing.org. You can also seek supervision or coaching. I'm told there's, you know, somewhere between 300 and 600 people on this phone call. So, you know, there's many people who are interested in this important technique right here in New York State. And as a New York State provider, I can tell you that there's many, many people across the state working with other behaviors as well, not just smoking, that are applying this technique that's been reviewed, you know, for its efficacy in terms of being effective at working with smokers who are not yet ready to change. You can form a peer discussion group, learning it from seeing what your higher clients react, or you can attend more trainings. Certainly my website is available to everybody. It's right there, www.jonathanfader.com. I provide trainings, and also through my website you can get to, through my bio, the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers, where you can find out more information on training in motivational interviewing across the country, not only here where I am in New York State, but across the country. So those are many different ways that you can do it. You can also attend the next phone call, which I'm sure in a minute here, Pat's going to tell you about. So I'm going to. You can move forward to this question slide. Before we answer questions, though, I'd like to turn over this phone call. We're going to have some time for people to ask some questions just in general about motivational interviewing. And certainly I encourage you to think about, if you can, attending the call that I'm sure Pat will talk about in a minute. But I'd like to introduce Patricia Bax, who's the marketing coordinator for the New York State Smokers Quit Line. She's going to give you some more information, I'm sure, about that phone call, but also just information in general about New York State Smokers Quit Line. And I want to thank you, Pat, so much for organizing this call. And I'll come back on the line here in a few minutes to answer your specific questions about motivational interviewing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fader, for that and for sharing your valuable knowledge and your experience with us this afternoon. And I'd like to just take a moment to share how motivational interviewing is addressed at the Quit Line. At the New York State Smokers Quit Line, our quit coaches are trained in the spirit of motivational interviewing, which Dr. Fader mentioned, and the importance of change talk. And our quit coaches do receive extensive training on using motivational techniques to assist our clients in their quit plan process. And this will also include decision balancing and eliciting self-motivating statements. For example, if we receive a call from a client and they are asked by a quit coach during the interview process, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all confident, 10 being extremely confident, how confident are you that you'll not be using tobacco a year from now? If their answer is on the lower end of the scale, the quit coach would encourage the client to identify ideas that would help the confidence level increase, and looking at the client's reasons to change. The quit coach may also offer affirmations supporting the client's ideas of how he or she could change. To assure the adherence to the practice of motivational interviewing techniques and the spirit of motivational interviewing, all our calls to the quit line are recorded and random calls are selected for quality assurance purposes. Training such as this excellent presentation conducted by Dr. Fader on today's call are also made available to all the quit line staff. If you are unfamiliar with the Quit Line services or you'd like to learn more information, please feel free to call us at 1-866-NY-QUITS. That's 1-866-697-8487. And as Dr. Fader mentioned, we will be having a follow-up call to this initial call on motivational interviewing to really address the five R's when it comes to addressing tobacco cessation with your patients. So at this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to Mike, and he'll open it up for questions and answers. Mike, we're now ready for questions and answers, please.
Okay, and at this time, if anyone does have a question, please press 0 and then 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay, and our first question is from Bill Panapinto. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, Dr. Fader. Thank you so much for an excellent presentation. This is more a comment and to let people know of another resource. I'm glad that you suggested that people take additional training in between these two calls. I just wanted to let addiction professionals know in New York State that there is free training available specifically on applying motivational interviewing techniques in the treatment of tobacco dependence in addiction treatment programs. And if you'd like more information, you can go to our website, which is www.tobaccorecovery.org, and you can look on there for a schedule of trainings in your area. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Bill, for that information. And as I said before, you know, I really encourage people to look into what Bill's talking about and to do your best to make sure that the training that you're attending is going to address, as Bill said, you know, all the needs that you have around tobacco use, because that the training that Bill's mentioning is really focused on tobacco use. So to get a good sense through Bill's website, tobaccorecovery.org, and also to check in the motivationalinterviewing.org website as well. Do we have any more questions about the presentation? I'd like to definitely make sure I answer all people's questions about this technique.
Okay, our next question comes from Sam Martin. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, that's Sam Martin. My comment, Dr. Fader, thank you for the wonderful presentation as well. My question is regards to the efficacy of this technique being utilized with a younger audience, let's say 18 to 24 age group or even 13 to 18-year-olds. Do you have any information that might be helpful or that I could research that could provide some information in terms of the effectiveness of this particular technique with that population?
Well, thank you so much for that question. People sometimes ask about the efficacy. And before I answer the specific question, what I'd like you to take a look at is if you go to the motivational interviewing website, you'll see that breaking it down by smoking and then also by different topic areas, there's a detailed bibliography about the efficacy of this approach. This approach is now on the SAMHSA website as a validated approach for dealing with the addiction. And there's a ton of research to suggest that this approach is effective within among the field of substance abuse and with smoking as well. Now, regarding your particular question about youth, just coincidentally, my doctoral research that I did actually was on applying this approach to adolescents. So I am familiar that this approach has been tested with adolescents and been shown to be effective. And anybody's welcome to contact me on my website, and I can get you more information, detailed information about that. Around smoking, I'm actually not sure about what studies have been done, particularly with adolescents. Most of the studies that I'm familiar with around addictive behaviors with adolescents, 13 to 18-year-olds, as you mentioned, Stan, have to do with drinking behavior, et cetera. But certainly this approach has been tested and validated among many different behaviors and smoking behaviors, and there's lots of pilot studies and information about how this approach is a viable approach working with adolescents.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Okay, and our next question comes from Sarah Malsom. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yes, I'm an addictions counselor currently, and we have a halfway house where people are required to quit smoking. And I was wondering if you have any additional things that might, or tips or strategies on using the motivational interviewing in a situation where they are, if they don't quit, they could be kicked out.
Well, it's a wonderful question. So the question really is that you're really asking is about, number one, sort of mandated people, right? People who are forced to quit in some way, or who have a very serious consequence around not quitting. And so, did I get that right?
Yes. Yep. Perfect.
One thing I just want to say about this question is it's a wonderful question because, you know, really it allows me the opportunity to expand more about motivational interviewing its purpose, and that really what you're talking about is, in my mind, one of the ways in which motivational interviewing is most helpful is around people like this who are mandated. So to give you a specific sense of what I mean about how you might use this approach. Now, people who are mandated are often the most angry and the most resistant people that we deal with.
Correct.
I'm sure that, you know, this is sort of like, I'm sure dealing in a situation similar to what you have, I know how frustrating that could be. Mm-hmm. And so really what we do in motivational interviewing is we try, first of all, to show the person that we understand their perspective. So even before we start talking about consequences or anything like that, what we try to do is, like you would in any therapy, right, build a rapport by asking questions about the person, trying to deflect from the resistance. So not to focus on the hot spot immediately, and start really with an understanding of sort of what, how they're feeling about it. Now, most likely they're feeling pissed, angry, annoyed. And so what we do is we do a lot of reflection about how angry and how upset this process is making them. And we might even bring into it their anger at us and just say, I know how angry they are. The other thing that I do usually when I'm working with someone like that is I try to do my best to put the control back in their hands. Now, with that situation, you really can't completely do that literally because these are the real contingencies. They're going to get kicked out. So what I try to do, and I say this to people, and I've worked with people in correctional facilities around things like this as well, is I say, listen, you know what? The consequences are the consequences, but really at the end of the day, you're the boss of your life. Those are the results, those are the consequences, but you know what? You're going to make whatever choices you want to make. You're the expert on your life. You know, these are the consequences that are going to be enforced, and you know, you and I know, unfortunately, we can't do anything about that. But you know, you're going to, at the end of the day, whatever information I give you or advice, you're going to make the choice that you want to do for you. One group of people that I work with that are certainly very resistant and often mandated are adolescents. And so one of the things I try to do in that situation is to say something like, you're the boss of your life. All the information here that I'm going to provide to you, right, is for your benefit, but you can choose to do what you want to do. So we try to provide a sense of autonomy and control even where there is very little. So that's how we start off with a person who's really very, very resistant, is to create that sense of autonomy and control even where there is very little. And then what I try to do with someone who's that resistant is I try, and maybe we'll cover that in the next call, is the use of affirmation. Something that we do when someone is very resistant is that we tend to get defensive or we try to help them too much. And so what I try to do is to affirm them, to find out something that they're doing. Usually when someone is mandated or in a halfway house in the situation you're talking about, they actually don't have that many good things to be proud of or things that they're being commended for. So I'll try to find something that they're doing in their behavior that I can affirm. Something maybe completely unrelated to smoking. Maybe it's something unrelated to behavior that I see. But I'll try to find out something that I can concretely point out to them. You know, you clearly are making an effort because you're coming to these meetings. Or, you know what, I saw you playing basketball the other day. It seems like, you know, that's something that's really important to you. So I try to allay their resistance by trying to, in fact, praise them for something that they're doing good, something they're doing well. And then once we have that rapport, I've rolled with the resistance enough, I'll start to ask them questions. Not about telling them, look, you know, you're going to get kicked out. I'll say, well, what happened if you got kicked out of here? Just because, you know, I want to understand your perspective. What would happen if you got kicked out? What would your life be like? Oh, you know, I'd be on the street, and that doesn't matter. Oh, okay, so it sounds like that's not a big deal. What's life like on the street? So to get them to tell us why it would be bad.
Okay, and just one quick thing. Also I also run the smoking cessation or recovery group here. What would be an idea for, like, group type activities? Typically I do a lot of stress reliever type activities. I was wondering if you just had any suggestions on...
Around increasing motivation?
Correct.
One of the things that you can do is to have a sort of a handout or a sheet, and you can take that even from the questions that I've put on here, mm-hmm. and have people go over the sheet, questions, like envisioning questions. Well, what would happen if they didn't make a change around their smoking, right? That's an example that could be helpful. And so basically what you can do is have them go through that and write down. And then people who feel helpful or feel that they are comfortable in sharing can share about those particular things. And then other people can learn from some of the hooks that other people. You know, one of the things I notice is in group work around smoking or diabetes care, any kind of motivational iron groups, people learn a lot from other people's motivation. So if you have someone who's saying, you know, I just don't want to go back on the street because, you know, I have to keep my eyes open every time someone's trying to steal my car or steal my cart or steal my, you know, my food, some other people will start to think about that. Mm-hmm. And so you can increase motivation in that way. And if you're interested more in motivational interviewing groups, there's still tons of information about that on the motivational interviewing website that I mentioned, and you can certainly find it there or on my website.
Okay, and again, that website?
My website is jonathanfader.com, and probably the easiest thing, just it's motivationalinterview.org, and you can always just get to it. If you go to my website, jonathanfader.com, through my bio, it says MINT, Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers. I encourage you all to make sure, if you're getting training on motivational interviewing, that you really try to get training from someone who's a motivational interviewing network trainer. Those people like myself have specific training from the organization started by Bill Miller, the founder of this technique. So we're all trained in providing trainings about motivational interviewing. So it's called Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers. And the website is on the slides. It's in the more information slide, or you can also get there from my website.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Good luck to you. I wish you all the best in using this important technique.
And Dr. Fader, this is Annie Beigel. I think we have time for one more question.
Okay. If anyone else at this time has a question, please press 0 and then 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay. Next question comes from Marianne Wood. Go ahead, Marianne.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Marianne. Go ahead.
Oh, great. I just wanted to say that my own personal experience, I'm a case manager, so I do give out smoking cessation and counseling all the time. I quit smoking myself 2 years ago in March, and I found it very helpful to make it personal because in my own life, I was about to have a grandchild, and it made a big difference, and it gave me the push I needed to keep going with the cessation because I knew that I did not want to expose my new grandbaby to cigarette smoke. So I think it's very important to make it personal, and I agree wholeheartedly. I know it's more of a comment than a question, but I just wanted to hit that point home as well.
Well, Marianne, I wish I could do more than just thank you virtually. I wish I could jump through the phone here and give you a hug or a high five.
Aww.
Or something. Because, you know, what you're saying, and I think it's a great way to end here, is that it's so important to figure out what's meaningful to our patients.
Absolutely.
And that what's good for us is good for our patients. So if we're not scared into quitting smoking by all the health concerns about lung cancer and all this stuff, probably our patients, most of them are not either. And so for you, Marianne, and for me and for many of us, figuring out what's important to us and how that may be in conflict with this problem behavior of smoking, and having an open, non-judgmental, non-confrontational counselor who can talk to us about these pros and cons. Now, you actually have some unbelievable strength because you're able to do it on your own. But there are many people out there that could really benefit from, as Marianne was pointing out, a discussion of their personal risk with someone who's going to be open to discussing the pros and cons. So I really want to thank you so much, Marianne, for making that comment. I think it's a great way to end this call and to also just say that we'll be talking more specifically about certainly the 5 R's and smoking behavior in general and how to work with people who aren't ready to quit in our next call. So I want to thank everybody for calling in very much. I look forward to hopefully being able to talk to you again in the next call.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Fader. And on behalf of the New York State Cessation Center Collaborative, the New York State Department of Health's Tobacco Control Program, and the New York State Smokers Quitline, we'd like to thank you very much for an excellent presentation today. And we're looking forward to you coming back to us again on September 2nd for a follow-up call. So this does bring us to the end of today's call, and I want to thank all of our participants today for participating, and have a good day.
All right. Thank you. That does conclude today's conference call.